The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, May 18th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. And Chet, welcome back, partner. We certainly have a lot to talk about after taking a spring break golf last week. And what about the Fighting Phils? They continue to play great ball. With today's win, they're 24-17, tied with the Nationals for first place, with the Nats and Mets playing tonight. Something has to give, but the Phils at the end of the night are going to be very close to first place. We also have the Sixers with the first pick in the NBA draft. And Sam Bradford, well, I can't wait to get your latest on him.
I'm sick of Sam Bradford, Bill, sick of him. So let's focus on the Phils, the Sixers, and our super cool guest for this evening.
Well, we said when we started this program a couple years ago that we planned to cover it all, and tonight we've got a guest like never before. The sports gal pal, Ramona Rice, will be joining us.
Yeah, Ramona's going to be lots of fun. We'll tell you her story and talk with her in about 30 seconds.
Well, before we get started, let's let our listeners know that we will have our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question back again tonight. We will be giving away a signed hockey puck by Flyers Hall of Fame goaltender Bernie Parent, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. We'll be answering that question about 7:29. So our Shop for Kisses phone line to answer that trivia question is 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. So with that business taken care of, let's welcome the sports gal pal Ramona Rice to the show. Ramona, welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable.
Well, hi, guys. How are y'all?
We are awesome. Ramona, this is Chet, and here's the deal. You are here basically through the magic of social networking. You were a guest on a podcast hosted by a good buddy of mine, Matthew Passy, last August or September. So thanks for bringing
him.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Thanks,
he's
Matthew,
fantastic.
For bringing Ramona to our attention. Then you and I became Facebook friends, and I've listened to many of your shows, and now you're here with us. So I like how this all came together. Anyway, Ramona, before we talk about your podcast, you reminded me the other day as we were exchanging messages that you grew up in the Virginia town that was also home to a certain brand-new basketball Hall of Famer who's, I guess, about 5 years older than you and whom Philadelphia fans are very familiar with. Am I right?
That's right. It's Allen Iverson, of course.
So tell me about him and, you know, what you knew of him growing up and if you have any great stories.
Oh, I've got a couple. So Allen Iverson in our town is actually known. Michael Vick's from here, Bruce Smith, Mike Tomlin. So we actually have quite a lot of really good Cam Chancellor, really good athletes and football players particularly that are from this area. The Upton guys are from here. David Wright's from here. So we've got baseball players as well. So it's a really good mixture of players. And, of course, Allen Iverson. And Allen Iverson, what a lot of people don't know growing up, is that he was equally good in football, and he was probably the better out of the three sports, baseball. He was an outstanding baseball player. And I think had he gone baseball route, he would have had an even better career in basketball. But basketball was his love, and that's what he went to. The interesting thing about Allen Iverson, if any of your listeners have seen the 30 for 30 special, no crossover trial of Allen Iverson,
yep.
The judge, the prosecuting attorney that decided to there was enough evidence to prosecute him was actually my best friend's dad. So
that's pretty wild.
It is wild, but it's a small town. You know, I mean, it's a big area, but it's kind of a small town. And so, so I have some interesting things, but I've never met the man personally. I don't, you know, I have no opinion of him other than he's an outstanding basketball player. His family's still in the area. They own businesses and things like that. So, I mean, it's just one of those things, but yeah.
You're talking, by the way, you're talking about Hampton and Newport News, right?
Yes, Hampton Newport News. So, especially if your listeners are into Navy at all, you know, we've got a huge military contingency down here. And so, yeah, and that's the real reason I came down here was my dad was in the Navy. And so that's when we moved here, and I've been here since I was three, so that's I'm a Virginian. And, yeah, so Allen Iverson is from my hometown, and I happen to be best friends with the of the daughter of the guy who said there was enough evidence to prosecute him. So, yeah, I know.
Well, Ava, notice you mentioned Mike Vick, and, of course, we have a little affiliation with Michael Vick here in Philadelphia. I know as a high school player and at Virginia Tech, he was just absolutely phenomenal. What was the reaction to the locals down that way when Mike Vick got in trouble and how he's bounced back and got back in the league?
Well, here's the thing about that, because that happened here in our local area. It was actually about 30 minutes from Newport News where the house was, and it was big news here. It was all anybody could talk about. And it was definitely divided by people who were pro-Mike Vick supporters and then pro-dog lovers. And so it's kind of one of those things, it doesn't really get talked about that much anymore. It's interesting. He actually graduated from high school. We went to different high schools. He went to graduated from high school the same year I did. So he and I are the same age. And what's interesting is that he was not really well-known in our area as far as high school quarterbacks. There was another guy named Ronald Curry, and he was kind of a big dude. And my alma mater, the University of Virginia, actually was recruiting Ronald Curry very heavily, and they completely ignored Michael Vick, and then our rival Virginia Tech got him. Well, we now know what happened. Virginia Tech made the better decision, and they went on to, you know, at least play in a national championship, and Virginia's football woes are, you know, legendary. It's been pretty pathetic. So, yeah, I mean, he's an interesting character. Again, I have run into him around town, and he's super nice. He's just a laid-back guy. He's not really – I think what happened to him really humbled him, and I think he has learned a lot. He gives a ton back to the community, and, I just think it's one of those things where it was a horrible thing that happened, and I think he's trying to move on from it.
I want to talk about your podcast, Ramona, the Sports Gal Pal. I guess you started doing a blog first after you became a sports fan several years back. You started this blog in 2012, the Sports Gal Pal. The description on your website, by the way, says, it is a place where gals and their pals can come together over sports, which I think is nice. That's sportsgalpal.com. And then you started doing your podcast just about a year ago. And I heard you tell our mutual pal, Matthew, the story, but I found it real interesting. So tell our listeners how the whole podcast thing came about last spring.
Sure. So last spring, I am in my real life, I'm a professional kind of social media guru for a really large company here in the area for a year. And so the conference I chose was actually a conference in Las Vegas. The same week as my husband's birthday. And I said, perfect, I'll go to a conference. He can come to Vegas with me, instant birthday gift. And he was thrilled. And so while I was there, I discovered podcasting, because that's really what the conference was about new media. And my company was kind of considering adding a podcast on. And I had never listened to podcasts. I was like, what are these things? They're so weird. Well, I'm at dinner, and I'm with a couple of the guys, and I'm telling them about the blog and my whole story of how that came about, and they were like, that's a perfect podcast. You should totally do that. You should totally explain sports to wives so that they will want to watch it with their husbands, because that's really how my sports fandom really took off. Yes, I liked my teams, but I wasn't really into watching every game until I realized my husband liked every game. It didn't matter what it was. If it was a puck or a broom or a ball, he was going to watch it. And so in order to spend time with him, I said, you know, let me at least attempt to learn. And once I realized how much fun it was, I really got sucked in. So I'm there, and the last day of the conference, I'd been listening to podcasts now, and I've been asking people, and I've decided, yes, I'm going to go ahead and do this. And I listened to a podcast by women about sports, and in March, instead of talking about, like, March Madness or baseball or basketball, they were talking about still the Super Bowl, and it just made me so angry, because it's perpetual that, you know, oh, the girls don't know what they're doing, and so I'm doing this sports rant with these random people I met, and this guy overhears me. Well, it turns out his name was Jay Soderberg. He's known as Pod Vader to a lot of people. He's head of content at Blog Talk Radio, and he said, I love you. I'm going to give you a podcast, and that's literally how it started.
That is pretty awesome.
Well, Ramona, I have a question for you. You are not a fan of the NFC East other than the Eagles, and you have a podcast that's entitled It's Dirty to Cheer for the Cowboys, which obviously makes you a fan favorite in Philadelphia right off the bat. Now, tell us tell us how that particular podcast came about, but how did you become an Eagles fan from down there in Virginia?
Well, I was born in Philadelphia. My dad was stationed in Philadelphia, and so I only lived there like 2 weeks, and then they got a Tiger cruise and took the USS Lexington back to Pensacola where it was based. And my dad's actually a Giants fan. So I know. No, it gets worse. My sister is a Cowboys fan, and then my mom and dad divorced, and she married a Redskins fan. We have the entire
NFC
covered. I know. We are that NFL shop commercial. We're that commercial. So
what are holidays like?
It can get really like fisticuffs. And what really happened was that I liked football. I didn't really have a team. My dad was stupid and didn't press on his sports fans. Like, my children are Eagles fans because I'm impressioning them going, no, we're going to stick with mommy. I know someday we will get a damn Super Bowl ring. We will. I swear it has to happen. The laws of odds say that it's going to happen. It was really Terrell Owens. When Terrell Owens came to Philadelphia, I'm like, that's it. Because I loved him. I know it's ridiculous. I was going through my bad boy wide receiver phase. So I loved his antics. And then when I started watching Philly games, it was Brian Westbrook that really kind of went, yep, that's my dude. I still loved him. He was ever so dreamy. I mean, he was just fantastic. Like, I really want him. But can we take the spirit of Brian Westbrook back and put it in a running back so that we always have Brian Westbrook on the field? Because then we would be unstoppable. I just know it. So and that's what started, and I just kind of adopted the team. I loved their attitude. I thought Andy Reid at the time was an excellent coach, and it was just a good time to be an Eagles fan. And, yeah, we're going through kind of a rough patch, and the Chip Kelly experiment exploded in our faces, and we're trying to – that's San Francisco's problem now. So it's almost like making up for the fact that we got Terrell. We gave our coach, our drama coach, like, here, take him. Be gone. So hopefully this year is much more stable is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for stability in this team this year.
Well, they're going to be interesting to watch, that's for sure. We have the new coach in Doug Peterson. We have the whole drama for the quarterback situation with Carson Wentz coming in. Sam Bradford's still there but not really wanting to be there. What do you look for from this team this year? I know the Vegas people say they're going to win probably about 7 games. What do you think? How do you see it playing out?
I could see them going 500. Again, they play a tough schedule. The problem is that we play also the NFC South, and they're kind of rising up. I think Carolina's going to have a really good year. I think Atlanta's going to settle in. Tampa Bay looks very dangerous. I don't know what's happening with, New Orleans, but the three of them. So we play them, and again, that NFC East, Washington is looking shakily good. It's really, really gross. I'm very upset that they, are getting like that – they're getting really good players. Their quarterback situation settling down. I'm not concerned about our quarterback situation. It will, we deal with this all the time. We dealt with this when it was Knowles and Sanchez. We dealt with it last year when it was, Bradford and Sanchez. It's just the way it goes. Vic and McNabb. It's just the way of the NFL these days. I'd rather have two competent quarterbacks than only one. I mean, look at Port Arizona. They have one quarterback that's decent, and Carson Palmer. He goes down, their entire season's over. So I'd rather at least have something competent. My concern is that with the new coach, it's basically Andy Reid Jr., and we've seen what happened. Really great in the regular season. We play really well the first playoff game, and then the second playoff game, it's like, what happened? So I'm kind of hoping that we stop doing that. It would be really nice.
I'd settle for one playoff game at this point.
At this point, sure. Let's make the playoffs. Let's, and again, the last year Nick Foles was on the team, we came pretty darn close. I feel like, again, if we get some run of luck, if Dallas is itself and implodes, again, let's hope. I mean, you don't want to hope for injuries, but you kind of hope for injuries, I'm mean. I don't mind saying it. Whatever competitive advantage we can take advantage of. I don't understand fans are like, oh, we don't wish injuries. That's silly. That's a competitive advantage, That's why that – made me really mad. I'm like, we basically killed Tony Romo and we still couldn't figure out how a way to win. That's when I knew Chip Kelly was the wrong fit. Right then.
Very good. Well, and sticking with that now, the Eagles, we looked at last year and I hate to go back to last year and the Chip Kelly thing because my opinion is very clear about what I thought about Chip Kelly from day one. But we've made a lot of changes, not only in the coaching staff, obviously, but offensively and defensively. What do you think about the defense and the changes they've made? Jim Schwartz coming in is supposed to be a high-energy guy that's going to play very physical, aggressive ball like, you know, the NFC has been known for in the past. Are you excited about the changes that have happened over on that side?
I am. I mean, anything can be better than what happened last year. I mean, because we had no pass. We just, it was awful. We had no pass rush at all. You know, I'm looking forward to that. My biggest concern with this team is still, and it was last year, the offensive line. In this day in the NFL, you must have a good line. We have seen what happens with teams that have an excellent, excellent offensive line. And when you don't have that, you don't give your quarterbacks time to adjust. You don't give your running backs room to run. Your tight ends can't really do anything. And then the balls can't get to the wide receiver. So for me, the core of a really good football team is that O-line. If that O-line is good, everything else kind of falls into place. It's got to start there. And that's why I was a little concerned with them trading all these picks to get this quarterback. I'm going, okay, we have O-line issues right now that we could have used all that to fill very easily. So I was a little kind of like concerned. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's not going to get any worse. They can only go up from here, in my opinion, because it's been so abysmal. I was really happy that they traded, got rid of DeMarco Murray. I mean, I had hope for him coming in, but it just didn't work out. Let's just be rid of it. And we got to start fresh. We got to start, you know, being Philadelphia football again.
Hey, getting back to the podcast, Ramona, you've been on hiatus, I guess, from the podcasting scene since early March, and it's certainly understandable as to why. And let me get into that this way. I had talked with you at the start of 2016 about you coming on our podcast, on our show, and at some point, you agreed, and I swear, the morning of February 25th, I was about to email you to schedule your visit, when I checked your Facebook page and saw some very heartbreaking news. So, you know, tell me what happened and, you know, how tough is it getting back into podcasting after all that?
Sure. So February 24th, my husband, who was 37, died of a stroke. And there's no other way to describe it. So basically it was a nuclear bomb went off in my life. And I took a break. I took a break from a lot of things. It's interesting because I was gearing up for college basketball. College basketball really is my happy, happy place. And it should be in Philadelphia because Villanova, which, by the way, my Wahoos beat them in the regular season. It's funny, UVA beat three out of the final four people in the regular season. I always like to mention that. It still does not. We should. Oh, I'm so upset about the season. But regardless. So, you know, I had to deal with that. My podcast in my sports fandom was very much tied in with my husband. And again, I tell this to wives all the time. If you want a happy marriage, there's a couple things you do. Regular sex, snacks for your guy, let him have some sleep, let him enjoy his sports or his hobbies, and figure out a way to spend some time with him doing that. And our life really was, I'm the wife that would be like, babe, on Saturday morning, I'm like, okay, we need to watch all the college basketball. I'm going to make chicken wings, and we're going to drink beer, and we're going to watch college basketball all day. And I know that's awful. And that's the way we would spend our time. We had season tickets to UVA football, and we would go up to games all the time. We would drive and go to games various different places. That was just our thing to do. And so here I am. I have a podcast where I'm basically talking about sports, and my main favorite sports fan is no longer here. And I had to take a really long time and go, do I really want to continue this? And as I was, you know, in the break, I kept off Twitter. I didn't really talk about sports at all. And I would watch it, and it was just odd to me. And I'm slowly getting back into it. So the show is coming back because he would want me to. And so the show is changing a little bit. It's really about me now finding out who I am as a sports fan on my own terms without him directly here. I mean, he'll always be with me. And so it's just about me discovering what sports fandom really means. And that's really what the show is. The show, in essence, is guys like you guys and other people from around the world come on and talk about why they love sports and why they love their teams and why they love their traditions. Because I feel like when we understand that, it helps us to more keep sports in perspective in our real life, because it is a distraction, but it's not real. And it helps you get over a loss pretty quickly. And two, you know, it's a common denominator that if more people, particularly women, get involved with sports, I feel like it allows them to not be resentful when their guys are like, I really want to watch this game, when they understand why it's important.
You did one podcast on March 5th, about 10 days after your husband died, I guess, entitled For My Husband, and it was a real nice tribute to him. I listened to the whole thing. I'm sure that was tough to do, but it also sounded like it was somewhat therapeutic.
Yeah, it was a couple of days after the funeral. I knew I needed, because I really hadn't, here's the thing about the podcast. So a lot of my podcast listeners are on Twitter, and my real life is on Facebook. I'm very much a social media girl. And because of that, my listeners didn't know what was going on. And I was religious about there were episodes every week. I never missed one. And I was getting emails, where are you? Is everything okay? And I just said, I need to do something. And I needed to get out these emotions because at that moment, you know, when that happens, someone has to be the grown-up. And I had to be the grown-up because we have two small children. We have a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old. I had to be there for them. You know, I kept thinking about his mom. I kept thinking about his sister. Like, all of them lost something irreplaceable. Eventually, I might be able to one day find another husband and find another love of my life to share my sports fandom and my life with. They're never going to get back their son, their brother, and their father. So I was putting a lot of my focus on them, and I realized I have to do something for me. I have to let this out. And so I did, and I tell people, do not listen to the episode. It's funny, one of your listeners, as you guys were promoting the show, was like, I listened to her. I do not listen to the episode at first, and I'm glad. I'm like, and I tell people, if you're going to listen to it, don't listen to the episode first. Just don't, because it's sad. I mean, I almost feel like I should take it down, you know, because it is so, so sad. But at the same time, I can't ignore the fact that it happened. It happened, and it sucks. I'm not going to tell you. I sound great today. Today's a good day. Tomorrow may not be. You know, grief is a funny, funny thing. And
yep.
it's one of those things where I could either decide to stay stuck and wallow in it, or I could say, you know what, I'm going to move forward. And some days I move forward great yards, and other days it's baby steps. But I'm still trying to go forward, rebuilding my life so that my children and I, we're family, and we're focusing on that right now. So that's why I needed to take the break from the podcast. I needed to spend time with them and just get kind of my life back into some type of new order. It was odd. I didn't pay attention to the draft, really. I mean, I paid attention a little bit. I wasn't really paying attention to March Madness. Like, these are things that I normally am like, let's go. Like, this is the best time of year because we've got baseball, we've got basketball, we've got hockey, we've got college sports, we've got, you know, so much stuff going on. I didn't care. It was the oddest thing. And I'm slowly starting to get back into it.
Very good. That's tough question, tough to follow up on. But I'm going to ask you one more question back on
sure.
the other side. We know you're an Eagles fan. What are your favorite teams? You know, in baseball and basketball and hockey. Are you Philly through and through, or do you bounce around a little bit?
You're a Penguins fan, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not. Really
good thing, because I have the off button over here.
No, I don't. You know, it's funny. With hockey, I never was into it. My husband wasn't into it, so it's one of those things I've not gotten into. With baseball, I'm agnostic. I love baseball, but I do not have a team, and that's a better thing to have because you don't get disappointed because it's such a long season. With basketball, I only really care at playoff time. Let's be honest. It's the second season is the one that matters. My true heart belongs in college sports with the University of Virginia. That's where I went to school. I'm a Wahoo. Sean Singletary was from Philadelphia. He's one of our great players. And watch out, Malcolm Brogdon, dear God, Maverick. Pick him, so we got him and Justin Anderson, and maybe I'll like the Mavericks only because I love them. My true heart is UVA and UVA Athletics, so that's really where my true passion lies, is them. And then with Philly, you know, I love them. I like them a lot. I love them. But the one that makes my heart go, oh, my God, it's UVA, without a doubt. It is definitely UVA. So, you know, again, I love going to baseball games. I've got a dream to go to every Major League Baseball stadium one summer, like on a big road trip. I'm still going to do that. That was something my husband and I wanted to do. And I'm like, you know what, we're going to do that. This summer, I'll be in Chicago. I'm going to hit Wrigley, and I'm going to hit Kaminsky in one trip. Because, you know, why not? I've been to, you know, the Texas Stadium, which was beautiful. I've been to, you know, Camden Yard. You know, I'm getting to all of them. But baseball is one of those kind of holy things that, it needs to be live and needs to be experienced. And it's a great date. Like, it's a perfect way to take your wife out to do something if she's into sports.
Very good. Well, hey, we do a segment here at the end of with all of our guests, especially our new guests, and we call it the Fast Five. And basically what it is, Ramona, is Chet asks five relatively simple questions, and he looks for five relatively simple answers. You up for that?
Sure, let's go.
All right,
take
Ramona,
it away, Chet.
Is, Fast Five. We're putting 90 seconds on the clock, so five questions in a minute and a half. Keep the answers brief. The Sports Gal Pal. All right, Ramona, other than T.O. and Brian Westbrook, who's your favorite Eagle of the past 15 years?
Probably McNabb. Or Cox.
Okay.
Fletcher Cox is good, too.
Can't go wrong there. If you were to buy a new Eagles jersey for yourself for the upcoming season, I know you have several jerseys, which player jersey would you buy?
Probably the new guy. Probably the quarterback.
Carson Wentz. All right. Chip Kelly, did you love him or hate him?
Hate him.
Especially at the end. Give us one good tip for a budding podcaster.
You know, take your time and find your own voice. You know, don't try to copy anybody. You have to be authentic. Like, if I tried to be anybody else other than myself, it wouldn't work. You know, and don't worry about download numbers. Just focus on creating great content. Your audience will eventually find you.
And finally, what is the best thing about living in southeastern Virginia?
We have beaches, and we're like 3 hours away from mountains. Like, it's the periphery, and I just love it. Plus, we have really good food. I'm not even going to lie.
Hey, one bonus question we have time. Is it true that you do your podcasts out of your walk-in closet? Because the sound quality is great, so whatever you're doing, it's working.
Yeah, I'm in the walk-in closet right now. That's where I do it. It's cedar line. It's enclosed. The kids know if mommy's in here. The tiny humans are like, okay, we can't go in. It's funny. My daughter actually popped in. She's got a progress report. I need to sign. I'm like, don't make a way. You know, without you guys knowing, because, you know, this is the way it is. But, yes, no, I'm in the closet. I'm a closet podcaster.
I'm not going to make any jokes about that. Thank you, Ramona Rice. Great job.
Thank you guys so
All
much
right.
for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, hey, Ramona, before we finish up, or as we finish up here, can you tell our listeners how they can hear your podcast, how they can get connected with you, either whether through Facebook or however they need to do that?
She's a big Twitter girl, too.
I am a big Twitter girl. So it's at SportsGalPal for all social media. Super easy to remember. You can go to SportsGalPal.com. The website's kind of a little bit under construction because I'm relaunching the show. And I've got a new show coming up with a buddy of mine. He was on my podcast several times, Tim, the Atlanta Falcons superfan from Next Fan Up here on Blog Talk Radio. It's called We Should Not Be Friends, and it's all about our dating adventures now as we're both single and our single lives. And he's a 28-year-old guy in Atlanta, and, again, I'm a 36-year-old widow mother of two, and how we're both kind of navigating this weird scene. He's one of my best friends, and it's hilarious. So that will be coming out. Hopefully we get those site done next week. So it'll be on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play. You guys can look it up. WeShouldNot.com is the website.
Sounds good.
Very good.
Thanks, Ramona.
Thank you guys so much.
Appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Hey, Chad, it's trivia time. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question. Write it down, 929-477-2888. 5-5, and as mentioned, we'll be giving away a signed hockey buck by Flyers Hall of Fame goaltender Bernie Parent, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, the first person that can call in and correctly answer the trivia question. So here we go. A Phillies question tonight to give away a hockey puck, but that's where we're going because the Phils are in first place. And Chet, I don't know if you know this one or not. We're going to test you. Name the Phillies player that made the most outs of any player to ever wear the Phillies uniform. Name the Phillies player that made the most outs of any player to ever wear the Phillies uniform. All right, let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Well, hey, Chet, just 2 weeks ago when we were last on the air, we had the Phils were 16-11. They're now 24-17. They've won seven of their last eight series. They have more wins than every team in the National League except the Cubs, who have 27. And night after night, they get above average to excellent pitching. Who would have thunk?
Every few days, Bill, I wait for the bubble to burst, and yet here we are, 6.5 weeks into the season, 41 games or a quarter of the year, and they're still getting it done. As you said, the great pitching is the key, because they're certainly not putting up a lot of runs themselves, not much offense. Velasquez and Nola have been great most of the time. Hellickson's been better than I expected, and the back of the bullpen has just been terrific. So I know it's only been a quarter of the season, but the Phils right now, as you said, at 24-17, are on a pace for 94 wins. Now, do I expect that to happen? Of course not. But who the heck knows? Remember, this is the same team for which the over-under was about 67 wins before the regular season began. If it's all a dream, don't wake me up.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I have to say this. It's really the pitching has just been astounding. You know, just unbelievable. This team is 29th in the major leagues in runs per game. At just 3.3 runs per game, they're 29th out of 30th. And here they are above 7 games above 500 and in first place and only have one player really hitting above 300 in Odubel Herrera hitting at about 330. They got more guys below 200 than they got above 300.
Yeah, Franco's only around 240. Galvis is, you know, somewhere around there. Good to see Borges, you know, finally sneaking above the 200, the Mendoza line. One guy, though, who has been on fire lately is that Tyler Goodell. 10 for his last 21 now. He hit his first home run today. So I like this kid. I saw him when I was down there in Florida in early March, and I said, that guy looks like he can be a ball player. So, you know, he's kind of a tall, lanky guy, but he went deep today. He plays a good left field most of the time. He had that great throw out at the plate to end the game Saturday night. I'm liking this Tyler Goodell.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned him because I actually listened to the game today on the radio, which is always fun listening to those guys anyway. But they had Pete McCannon on after the game, and he was talking about Goodell, and he said, you know, he started out so bad, he said, but I've seen this kid play for years, and I knew he was better, and I knew he was going to get better, and that's why I left him in there every single day. He says he is going to continue to get better. Now, like you say, he's hot and certainly won't stay that hot, but in the manager's perspective, this kid is got a chance to be pretty good. And he's going to get better every night. And that's a great thing. And speaking of Pete McCannon, I think, my goodness, hats off to him. He's managed – those guys have managed to put together a bullpen. We thought they would have halfway decent starting pitching, I think. But he's put together a bullpen that is just lights out every night and patched together a lineup, moving guys around, trying to make things happen and scoring enough runs to win.
Yeah, he is getting it done, Pete McCannon. And we're going to have a guest next week who we'll talk about in a little bit, but a guy who I've heard say he's been in the clubhouse several times this year, and he said the atmosphere is just totally different from a year ago. So the players seem to really love McCannon, and it's just a different world from the dredge of, you know, the Ryan Sandberg days when he was there last year and I guess didn't really want to be. So, wow, what a turnaround. Give Pete McCannon a lot of credit for that. By the way, how about that Tommy Joseph? He, you know, has come up in the past 5 days, I guess, got a few starts already. Last night he really broke out, hitting his first major league home run and going 3 for 3. So, you know, there's a lot of fans clamoring for him to be the everyday first baseman now, not just playing against left-handers, especially after another offer from Ryan Howard today, who's hitting, what, about 175 now?
Or less.
Oh, yeah,
and I was going to bring up Ryan Howard because we seem to talk about him just about every time we're on. And, you know, I think it was the last time we talked, we said, you know, it's pretty much time to cut bait. And I certainly think, you know, I'm a huge Ryan Howard fan or have been, or they would have never been where they were without him. But I think that ship sailed. It's time to move on. Cut him loose.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah, 168, by the way, now for Ryan Howard.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
and then in 36 games, he's got 8 home runs and 17 RBIs and hit 168. Just not going to get it done, and especially if if you're a young team and you're starting to play a little better, and I guess at the quarter mark here, we're not mailing this season in, so we're going to continue to push as far as we can until we can't go anymore. They need to do whatever it takes to get better.
I don't think he's going to be here in September. I think he's going to be gone somehow, some way, before September 1st.
Yeah, well, and maybe what it's going to take is maybe if Tommy Joseph ends up being the guy and he can come in and produce on a regular basis, maybe, you know, Darren Ruff didn't do it. So cutting Ryan Howard loose and giving the job to Darren Ruff wasn't the answer. Maybe if Tommy Joseph gets the job done, that will be what finally, pulls the plug on Ryan.
And just a little aside, I want Tommy Joseph's birth certificate checked. He is the oldest-looking 24-year-old I've seen in quite a while, since, I guess, Greg Oden. Tommy Joseph is 24. He looks like he's 42.
I hear you. Well, hey, I always had to ask you this also about my man Freddie. What about Freddie Galvis? I know you kind of got to where you like Freddie a little bit. You think he's just filling a little placeholder? I know our buddy Carl Henderson, he and me are on the same page with Freddie. We're not fans, but Carl feels the same way about Cesar Hernandez as he does Freddie Galvis. And Cesar is actually hitting the ball a little bit, hitting in the mid-260s.
Yeah, Caesar's having a better year than Freddie. Freddie's up and down. He'll get hot once in a while. I think I saw Carl campaigning to at least consider putting Blanco at shortstop every day instead of Galvis. I don't know about that. But, Freddie is what he is. He's not the long-term answer. And, you know, hopefully next year at this time we're going to see J.P. Crawford there at shortstop.
Well, it won't be long. I don't think it's going to be this year, but it won't be long.
No.
But I have one more player situation to ask you about. You are extremely high on that Maikel Franco. And you know what? He's not getting it done to me, Chet. He's hitting 242, something like that.
Yeah.
Hitting a lot of long fly ball outs. You know what? They're outs. We need him to be hitting up in the 280s and hitting the ball out of the park.
He's pressing a little bit. And it would help, of course, if they had somebody other than, you know, Ryan Howard or whoever they're putting out there to bat behind him, because, you know, he's not getting the protection. And so, you know, that makes it tougher on a hitter. But I think he'll come around. He's got the natural talent. He's got the ability. I think Franco's going to be okay. He's still young. Give him a chance. I'm certainly not losing confidence in Maikel Franco.
Well, I'm not losing confidence in him, but I have one crossed eye that I watch him with, because, and I think I told you this before on our show, that last year in spring training I watched him and he was awful. He couldn't make the club coming out of spring training last year. He got sent down actually in the middle of spring training. He did his time and played well in the minor leagues. He came up and he played well at the end of last season and certainly deserved, you know, the starting position this year, but we need to see consistent play from Franco moving forward before we want to anoint him the next superstar.
Yeah, we want to see him be the next superstar, not the next Dom Brown.
That's right. And speaking of superstars in the making, Chet, we have to talk about Odubel. Odubel Herrera is just swinging the bat up in the 330s, up in the 340s, night after night. His on-base percentage is almost 500, 460, 470, something like that. He is the whole package in my mind, and I said that last year. I said that in spring training, and I'm sticking to it. I don't know that everybody agrees with that, but I think he's got a chance to be really special.
Yeah, I guess they gave him the day off today. Otherwise, he's played every game. And since moving into the leadoff spot, he has been terrific. So I like him. I like the way he hits. And I like the fact that he's become more patient this year. He's gotten a lot more walks. He sees a lot more pitches. So, yeah, I'm high on Odubel as well. Plus, I love the name. Odubel Herrera just sounds nice.
El Torito.
Yes.
All right. Well, hey, before we get to the Sixers and the impact of the first-round pick in the draft, I want to get back and touch on your man, Sam Bradford. And, You know, I saw our friend Mark Eccles' article yesterday. I think it was yesterday or today, where he's saying it's time to cut bait very soon. Maybe not today, this week, but it's time to let Sam move on. And I've seen some fans already upset about yesterday's presser where his body language just wasn't very good.
I told you I was sick of talking about Sam, but if I must, Bill, I don't know how it's going to play out, but maybe he'll be fine once they get into the swing of things and he gets it into his head that regarding his trade me demand, there were no other takers for him. So he's got to either give it his all for as long as he's an Eagle or just retire. I mean, he has no other choice. If nobody else wants him and they can't make a trade, you know, with him in the centerpiece of it, you know, he's going to have to be there as the man this year, even though it is just as a placeholder. So if he doesn't get that in his head, it's just going to be a real mess. Otherwise, you know, you got Carson Wentz, and all the reports are he's looking great. I know it's just workouts and, you know, throwing with no defenders, whatever, but people are really saying they love the way the ball comes out of his hands. He's, like, really accurate. He looks confident. And if Bradford is going to be looking over his shoulder, which you hope won't be the case, we may see Carson Wentz sooner than expected.
Well, I think you're in a jam there because you've paid Bradford for 2 years of guaranteed money and lots of it. So you either eat that or, you know, one of the articles I saw today said that his teammates welcomed him back. It's business. You know, that's the other side of it. When he comes on the field, he's ready to go. So you have that side of it. But then you have the flip side, and you can do what Tampa did with Jameis Winston and Tennessee did with Marcus Mariota. You put him in there. You turn them loose. You know they're going to make some mistakes along the way, but they're going to learn, and we're going to learn with them, and we're going to get better. And, you know, there's definitely two sides to the coin of how you go with that.
Yeah. And the thing with Bradford, though, is he has no margin for error now with the fans especially. I mean, if he starts out and they're 1-4 and he's at, you know, a 70% passer rating, they're going to run him out of town. So he's got to be playing lights out and have the Eagles at, you know, 4-1 or whatever in mid-October, or otherwise it's going to get ugly. And, you know, he alluded to it in his little press conference yesterday. He heard that it was kind of ugly on social media and elsewhere. So that's got to be in the back of his mind where he's going to feel a little pressure to do well. And if he doesn't, he's going to hear it from these fans. They're not real sympathetic.
Oh, no kidding. All right. Well, hey, let's run back over to the Sixers. First pick in the draft.
Hey, before you do that, throw out the trivia question again, because I want to give away that puck tonight, darn it.
Yeah, we actually, we've had that puck up a couple times, haven't we? And this is actually, if you think your way through this is a pretty easy question. Name the Phillies player that made the most outs of any player to ever wear the Phillies uniform. Okay, and I will tell you this. The reason that it's worded the way it is it does not include outs that he might have made in another uniform.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a guy who's been a Philly for a long time and had a lot of at-bats. So, you know, think about it.
And he may have played somewhere else during his career.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. You're with us. We're giving away hints. We're trying to give away that Bernie Parent hockey puck, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. So okay,
you know,
so let's get back over to the Sixers and what's your thinking here as we get the first pick in the draft? Good. Well, obviously, it's good in that you get to get the you know what's supposed to be the best player, but is there a, you know, I don't see there being a LeBron, a Kobe, a Kevin Durant, those kind of guys. I don't see them guys in the draft.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's not a LeBron or a Steph Curry or, you know, a guy who is a surefire can't miss. Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram will be the pick, obviously. Everybody knows that. there are some reports out there the Sixers are already leaning towards Simmons because he looks a little more NBA ready. Plus, there's the connection with Brett Brown, having coached Simmons' dad over in Australia. So that would make the most sense, I guess. They're kind of similar players in that they're both tall point forwards, 6'9 or 6'10. A lot of people don't like the fact that the Sixers need a shooter, and Simmons is not a great outside shooter. He's a good ball handler, but he's not a great shooter. That's, I guess, one of his biggest weaknesses, in fact. He attempted only three-pointers the entire season at LSU. Meanwhile, Ingram is a better shooter, but he's 6'9", 196. So he's a rail. He's skinny. He's going to have to get stronger, put on some weight, and so that's probably going to take a couple of years for him to develop. I don't know. I mean, I heard D. Lynam say Ingram is probably the better fit right now as the way the team is constituted, but I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. The key for me is what is happening with Joel Embiid, and what I like is the fact that he's apparently doing pretty well. He himself tweeted last night that he's pretty much ready to go or will be ready to go this fall. He said the number three pick from the 2014 draft is going to be ready too, talking about himself. So, boy, I hope that's the case, because for me, he is the key, not this number one draft pick. It's Joel Embiid. And then if you get Saric over, you know, then you're starting about getting a team together. And one other thing, I heard Bob Cooney say today on Philly Sports Talk that if they can get a commitment from Saric that he's definitely coming over, then Ingram might be the pick, because that would be a better combination, Saric and Ingram. Whereas if Saric is not coming over, then they'd probably definitely take Simmons. So it's going to be very interesting how it's all going to play out over the next 5 or 6 weeks.
Well, you know, it's interesting with Simmons. I watched him play actually a handful of games, probably I'll say a half a dozen. And yep. I wasn't all that impressed with him. I mean, he's definitely got tools, but he's young, and he just didn't look to me like the kind of guy that's going to would warrant being the number one pick in the draft. I mean, maybe I missed it. I mean, he's just 18 years old, 19 years old, so maybe I missed it, but I just didn't see a kid that could put a team on his back. His own team didn't even make the tournament, so I just don't know that I like that pick there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, there was almost a part of me that wished they got the number two pick, because then they wouldn't have to make the decision. Then whoever, you know, went number one, the Sixers would take the other guy, and, you know, that's just the way it had to be. But now the pressure is really on to get this right, because, I mean, we heard about the process for the last three years. Well, Sam Hinkie's gone, but his process kind of played out, at least this year, the way it was supposed to, where they got the number one pick. But now they got to get it right with whoever it is, Simmons or Ingram.
They do. And, hey, I wanted to ask you something I thought was really unusual, unless it was just a lucky guess. But how about the tweet that came out mid-afternoon from Dikembe Mutombo congratulating the Sixers on getting the number one pick about 5 hours before the cards came out?
Yeah,
wild guess by Mutombo, or
they did not do the lottery by that time as yet. They do it an hour or two before the actual show, though. But they had just asked some Sixers people to get tweets ready, you know, in case they got the number one pick. And I kind of believe this was the case, but you never know with Dikembe. But I don't think that he had any inside knowledge of anything. I think it was just one of those things where he got this ready, and then he also said, well, he saw that they had the highest odds of getting the number one pick, so that factored into him having the tweet ready, and he, you know, hit the button to put the tweet out by mistake. So who knows, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, hey, Chet, I have one more comment kind of off the wall from everything we're talking about, not even Philly related, but, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, one of our favorite teams, are playing the Tampa Bay Lightning in the finals here. I wanted to throw something at you. This is the Eastern Finals. This is a policy that's been in place. Actually, they've modified it over the years, but I'm going to read this to you, how this policy reads, okay? In an effort to increase the team's home ice advantage and fend off transplants who moved to Florida in search of sunny weather but never left their home teams behind, the policies, according to the team's website, bar any attire, apparel, clothing, accessories, flags, noisemakers, and other gear branded with the name, logo, or registered marks of the then-current 2015-16 playoff opponents of the Lightning, in this case, the Penguins. You are not allowed in certain sections of Amalie Arena in Tampa to wear anything that says the opponent's names.
I did not hear that.
What do you think of that, Mr. Chesko?
You know what I think of that? I think that is bull crap. If I was a fan, I would go to court over that. How can they tell you what to wear? I mean, they can say you can't wear a tank top maybe or, you know, motorcycle colors or whatever, but you can't stop a fan from, you know, wanting to represent the team that you're rooting for. Come on, that's ridiculous.
Well, and last year what they did, two things. One is they only sold playoff tickets to callers or, you know, people that called in that had Florida area codes. That was one thing they did. The other thing they did is if you were a season ticket holder and someone showed up in your seats in the Blackhawks, it was the Blackhawks series last year, in a Blackhawks shirt, I don't know that they actually were successful. They tried to pull your season tickets because you apparently sold your tickets to the other team.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's reminiscent of what the Washington Nationals have been doing for the last 2 years, not selling tickets to, you know, area code 215 people from the Philly area, which is ridiculous. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I saw that today, and I thought, you know what, because they are playing in Tampa tonight here at 8 o'clock, and I just thought it'd be interesting to get your take on that because, to me, it's just absolutely ridiculous. How can you not
– Absolutely.
How can you not go to the game? It doesn't matter where you live. What if you lived in Kansas City and you want to go to an Eagles-Chiefs game and you wear your Eagles shirt?
Yeah.
Of course you would. You
yeah,
know?
Somebody should go to court and try to get some kind of injunction. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well – We'll see, but that's the rules, and that's the way they have it lined out. But I thought it was pretty crazy.
I hear you.
All right, we still don't have any callers on our trivia, so we'll move on and let's get our signing updates at Carl's Cards and Collectibles. NHL Hall of Famers Mark Howe and his brother Marty Howe will be in the store on May the 21st. That's this weekend, Chet. I think you
yes,
had that
it is.
One on your list, didn't you?
I did have it on my list. I will not be able to make it, however, because, as you know, I'm a big music guy. I will be at the MM Barbecue on Saturday seeing 8 different bands. So I will not be able to see Mark and Marty Howe, unfortunately.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, he's also got the first Flyers captain, Lou Angotti. He's back on the schedule after some health issues. He'll be in the store on June the 1st. B-Doc, Brian Dawkins, will be in the store on Saturday, June 19th, and the newest addition to the signing list, former Eagles Pro Bowl running back Wilbur Montgomery will be in the store June the 25th. Stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give them a call at 610-789-4996. You can also visit the website carlscards.com or contact him on Twitter at Carl's Cards. Wilbur Montgomery, Chet.
Yep, one of the greats, and we remember what he did against those stinking Cowboys in the 1980 championship game.
You know it. You know it. Well, Chet, you mentioned earlier about having a guest lined up for next week. What do we got?
Yeah, we have a good one. Another first-timer, by the way, and one that I'm really looking forward to, especially with the Phillies playing as well as they are. He is the Phillies publicity guy, also known as their director of fun and games. And he, by the way, he is our second straight University of Virginia grad, I just realized. Yes, I'm talking about Mr. John Brazier. And if you've ever heard John doing radio appearances, he is a blast.
Very good. Very good. I think that's the kind of job I want to have, Chet. I want to be the director of fun and games. anywhere.
Yeah, hell, that would be fun. I mean, you get to plan all sorts of fun events. You get to hang around with the fanatic. You get to go on radio shows. So, yeah, that's a good life.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Do we have a parting shot for you, Mr. Chesko?
We do indeed. Speaking of the Phillies, the Phillies have been pretty fortunate over the years to have guys at the all-important catcher position who have managed to stick with the team for a long time. Tuesday night, Carlos Ruiz caught his 1,000th game for the Phillies. He is the fourth player in Phillies history with 1,000 or more games at catcher, joining Mike Lieberthal, Bob Boone, and the legendary Red Doon, and the 48th player in Major League Baseball history to catch 1,000 games, with one team. So when you think of the Phil's great teams from 2006 through 2011, you generally think about Howard, Utley, and Rollins, and you think about the pitchers, guys like Hamels, Myers, Halliday, Lee, and Lidge. But how about some love for the guy who's been behind the plate the great majority of time since 2006? Yes, he's 37 now and will likely be gone after this season. And no, he won't be a Hall of Famer, although he probably will be a Phillies Wall of Famer. He gets and deserves a lot of credit for how he's handled the Phillies pitchers over the last 10 years. And so I want to salute him on that 1,000 games behind the plate milestone. Way to go, Chooch.
Awesome. Okay, Chet, my parting shot is away from the Phillies, and you know what it's about, but here we go. And you know, every so often in life you get the opportunity to do something really special, and I've had that opportunity several times, but during our spring break last week, I had an opportunity to attend the Invictus Games at Disney's Wide World of Sports. So what does Invictus mean? And what are the Invictus Games, you ask? Invictus in Latin means unconquered. So what are these games? The Invictus Games are an international Paralympic-style multi-sport event created by Britain's Prince Harry and charity in the United States by President George W. Bush, in which wounded, injured, or sick armed service personnel and their associated veterans take part in sports, including track and field, wheelchair basketball, sitting volleyball, indoor rowing, etc. 14 countries were represented with athletes participating that had no legs, no arms, blind, etc. It was truly an inspirational event and once again proves there is nothing greater than the human spirit. The 2017 Games will be held in Toronto. Absolutely fantastic event, sir.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I caught a bit of it on ESPN, and it is very inspiring and great to watch. Great to see those guys.
It was very cool. The only downside about it, Chet, is I live 30 minutes from there, and I found out about it on Sunday morning on the Today Show.
Oh,
no advertisement. There were a few thousand people there. Prince Harry was there. George Bush was there. Laura Bush was there. Michelle Obama was there for opening ceremonies only. But they all were there, but very, very little publicity, but very, very successful and inspirational time to watch these athletes. And, you know, the important thing to these athletes from the 14 countries was the competition and the reward of finishing. When you're watching an 800-meter race, and there are three participants in this race. Two of them have one blade and one leg, and the third one has two blades and no feet. And the first two are waiting for the other guy to finish at the finish line to congratulate him. It was something special.
Yeah, very moving.
All right. Well, say, as we get to the top of the hour, let's thank our special guest, the sports gal pal Ramona Rice, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you will join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, May 25th at 7 p.m. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. And hey, Chet, We have to say it. It's May 18th, and the Phils are in first place. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.